Iowa Contemporary Art presents Icon Art Radio.
A work of art is a gift, not a commodity. Every modern artist who has chosen to labor with a gift must sooner or later wonder how he or she is to survive in a society dominated by market exchange. And if the fruits of a gift are gifts themselves, how is the artist to nourish himself spiritually as well as materially in an age whose values are market values and whose commerce consists almost exclusively in the purchase and sale of commodities? Lewis Hyde from The Gift, from the preface of Susie Gablick's book, Has Modernism Failed? This is Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio.
Well, do you agree that modernism has failed?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to get that out of the way.
I'm afraid that's another radio show.
That's right.
A long one. And even one on Susie Gablick is a long one. Susie Gablick is a well-known art critic in New York and has pressed the issue of what art is beyond the usual boundaries. She's a kind of a radical critic. Mm-hmm. So she's raised a lot of interesting questions. One is that modernism doesn't have the avant-garde edge that it once had. But we'll take that up on another one.
I'm trying.
I want to bring it back to the issue of the prostitution of one's art.
Selling out.
There we go. Vasily Kandinsky spoke of art as coming from a place of inner necessity, and yet every artist knows this tension that takes place within himself and in the context of his work between realizing his inner necessity and paying the rent, putting a roof over his head, the idea of settling down, having a family, all of the domestic issues, and it drives almost every artist crazy to the point that they get to this point of feeling, due to compromises that are made, that they're prostituting their art. Mm-hmm. I'm sure one of you guys has something to say on this subject.
I think for my problem is a very kind of tangled up one, because growing up in an art world where art is more of an investment product than, you know, that's, I always felt like I was actually copping out by not being interested in marketing my work. So that whenever I produced something out of my own creative energy, my own inner necessity, I felt like I was being lazy and not a real artist. And so it was like really tangled up, because, you know, and then when I focused on trying to make something I could sell, I lost the creative energy. And it was basically the question I asked myself is, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Who was influencing you? Was your family or friends?
Family, art school, you know, articles in magazines about art. It was just and maybe it was just my own naive interpretation about what I saw and valued.
It's interesting, because I grew up in a, I guess, a somewhat more science-oriented environment, although it was a highly creative environment, but we didn't talk about fine art much. I spent huge amounts of time at the Metropolitan Museum of Art because we lived almost next door to it, but I have to admit a large attraction was the mounted knights in armor jousting as you walked in the front door, so it wasn't exactly fine art. It was more military-industrial complex. But I remember at an incredibly ridiculous age, I mean, shortly after I learned how to write, I started writing stories, the descriptions of things, and getting lost in the words and being fascinated by that. And I remember getting the idea in my head that it would please the adults in my environment if, although they acknowledged my ability to write, if I acknowledged my understanding that it wasn't a practical direction for my life. And I, you know, I was, how old are you when you first start writing sentences? You know, 5, 6 or something like that. So I, you know, even before I knew anything about art or thought about the word or, you know, had anything to do with interacting with society, I already knew that there was some sort of, you know, tension between doing what you want to do and getting paid. And apparently from, you know, way before the age of reason, I was also, you know, concerned about getting the approval of the people that I respected.
Yeah, I was just going to say that too, because it's getting paid involves more things than just money.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's such a debilitating factor too, when you're creating something you absolutely love and then all of a sudden you get all crippled up and want to hide it in a drawer because you think, boy, everybody's going to just think this is so stupid if I show it to anybody.
Yeah.
Well, that, yeah.
There are whole dimensions of my creativity that I don't show anybody. Nobody will ever find out.
Well, I learned how to let it all hang. That's what I've learned, how to be free and let it all hang out. And it's, the miracles happen when you allow that to happen.
Yeah. Well, I've been fighting this, even in a non-artistic context. I mean, I think it's something that anyone who doesn't find a way to make a living doing what they really like has to deal with. I remember, you know, when, after I'd been married and I was, you know, earning real money and living in real houses and things, I wanted desperately to have various kinds of facilities, you know, but in my case, I wanted more of a shop. In someone else's case, they might want a, you know, a bass boat or something. But if you're earning enough money to be able to afford those kinds of things, you often don't have time to use them. And if you have time to use them, it's often because you don't have the money to, you know, buy the wood or the gas or keep the thing, you know, afloat. So it's a fundamental, you know, conflict between doing what you want to do and somehow supporting what you're doing. So if you like being an attorney or a doctor or you know, a house painter or something, then you're doing what you like and there's no need to be concerned about it. But a lot of us don't seem to fall into those categories.
Yeah, I don't know. It's such a complex issue. It's so basic that I don't even know where to start myself.
Yeah.
But every time someone's, I've been through about 5 stages of reaction to the things you guys have been saying, and I just want to start butting in, and then you're on to something else, and I have another reaction to it.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, this, one of the most, one of the kind of almost the most depressing moments in my career was when I was doing, when everyone came up to me and said, isn't it nice to be doing what you love, to be able to make a living doing what you love, making this wonderful fantasy art that's so uplifting, that nothing, I mean, it was like you couldn't find a wrong here. Mm-hmm. It was everything you just said, plus what the subject matter, everything was right, except I'd worn it out. And the inner necessity was to move on. And so how do you deal with this inner necessity to do something that's totally beyond reason, only for its own reason, and all these other issues just have to, like, take their place behind it? I mean, this is the stroke usually of the very greatest artists, and whether they make a lot of money or don't make a lot of money seems to be secondary. I mean, you've got the Beatles and you've got Rubens.
Yeah.
They all were, I mean, the Beatles, contemporary Rubens in his time, very great artists, very innovative, following their inner necessity, and at the same time, very wealthy and successful.
Yeah.
And you've got Van Gogh and these other folks that followed inner necessity and were only treated like pariah, you know. Somebody else say something.
Well, there's also, the, I mean, when I started doing fine art full-time in L.A. Several years ago, and I guess I should add that I didn't continue doing it for very long, you know, I had money saved up. I was comfortable. I had space. I had light. I had, you know, all of the acrylics I could possibly need. And at the same time, I was, as soon as I started thinking in those terms that I'm going to take this seriously, that word seriously kind of tainted the whole process. And I found myself thinking, okay, how am I going to get into galleries? Which galleries should I visit? There are some local galleries. I know the people a little bit because I've been in them and talked to them about the work that they have. Would I be compatible with any of their particular marketing plans? And, you know, the farther I got into that line of thinking, the less interested I was in painting anything. And so I began just, you know, bouncing off of the marketing and then eventually just raw merchandising of art. Because coincidentally, some other people I was close to were getting involved in art selling. And they'd go to the, you know, LA Convention Center Art Expo and have a booth. And if you're a practicing artist and you're concerned about your muse just keeping you too overloaded with things to do, just go to the LA Art Expo. And after an hour, hour and a half, you won't touch a brush for a year. It's just horrendous. And yet, why is it so horrendous? Is it the commercialism of it, or is it just that every art booth is showing artists who have found a commercial niche? And so you're seeing what happens to the expression of an individual when they're focused on trying to keep doing what they just did instead of following some other direction. They're following the money direction, and they may not be thinking in terms of money, but, you know, their dealers are saying, more of the blue ones, please.
Because it's not just, I think one of the other problems that comes up in this, because it happens to me even if I go to a museum, is virtuosity mm-hmm. versus experimentation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten into certain media with my own art where I realize, oh, I'm good at this. Mm-hmm. And there's a temptation to just keep doing that because you figure, you know, if I just keep doing this one thing, I'm going to be like really good at this. But my impulse always, I love beginnings, and I love discovering, trying something and discovering something new. And if you're always like going to something like the expos or any kind of art show or museum, you feel like I'm never going to be good enough unless I figure out how to solve this problem. You know, what should I be? Should I be just one kind of artist, or should I follow my muse? And my muse seems to be, let's try this. Let's see what happens when we do this.
Yeah, that's the problem I've dealt with a lot. And I think in the end, the whole problem is a mistake. Just even attempting to deal with the problem, because it's coincidence. It's your karma. It's whatever happens, you know. I mean, when I die, people will come and empty out my house wherever I happen to be, and they'll find all kinds of idiotic stuff. And if one of them has a sort of curatorial bent, they'll say, look at this, how this reflects the mind of an individual. Other people will say, God, look how much money he wasted on technology that he never really exploited. And other people will look at it and say, God, this guy must have been insane. Or other people will look at it and just say, what a mess. And you know, who you are after you're gone, that legacy issue of, you know, what should I leave behind, is just another, it's just an extension of what should I do now?
Yeah, it's
are you
the
doing
same
it for
story
them?
That stuff is piling up today just as it'll be sitting there when you're dead.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's serendipity and karma, very mm-hmm. much, as to whether somebody comes along. For instance, Priscilla Steele of the Campbell Steele Gallery mm-hmm. just happened to be at the gallery. And I was not interested in showing any of my work at that point because I'm a curator and a teacher and all this at the moment. She spotted some of my tiny little drawings down in the just in the corner, mm-hmm. and had to have them in the gallery. I mean, this is total serendipity and karma. Yeah. I could have like tried all for weeks and months and years to figure out how to put portfolios and resumes and all this stuff together, mm-hmm. in order to present it to galleries, in order to get into a gallery, and been rejected.
Yeah.
Or there's something like that happen. It's just so interesting.
Well, I think it shows that you the place to put your attention is on what you actually want, not on what you think you should want, or on what you think other people think you should think you want, which, horrible though it sounds, is what most of us kind of tend to do. Because you've only got this particular path on which you can do your things, and if you get into them and do what you want, there's a chance of finding some fulfillment in it. If you try to do what you think you're supposed to want, you're already, just by definition, stepping aside from your own fulfillment.
And why do people want money or fame anyway? Because they think it's going to bring them some kind of fulfillment and happiness and fulfill their dreams and all that. And yet if they're not fulfilling their dreams or being happy while they're producing the art, I mean, they could be doing that. I'm very fond of transitory art that you just create out of whatever you find around the house, and you make something. My son has been doing this for years, and yet it was drummed into my head for many years that I needed to take better care of the things that I created, because why was I leaving this drawing on the floor? Why was I never framing things? And you know, why was I using an old piece of cardboard instead of some good paper to do something? And all these restrictions just made me not want to do any art because it was too complicated. And now I'm doing it again. And actually, your mask making workshop was a big breakthrough for me, because there were all these 44-cent bottles of craft paint from Walmart that were so much fun to use, and it helped me to let go of all of these old.
It was,
and I'm learning
priceless
from this thing a lot, because I've always felt this dichotomy between the innocent, spontaneous expression, and then the packaging for the world, which is what we're discussing today, and where does it get off? And this mask-making thing just came up spontaneously, and it's giving a lot of life and energy to the innocent, direct, spontaneous action of the artist in everyone coming out. Anyone walks in there and starts doing a mask is suddenly an artist, but they're not thinking of themselves as an artist. They're just thinking of themselves as making masks with all this cool stuff. That's the pure level of expressing oneself from inner necessity.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be Kandinsky on some Mount Olympus of the arts saying this thing. It's happening right there at the mask workshop, and it's so cool.
Yeah, it's the artist without the baggage.
So I'm learning a lot, because I've got a lot of baggage to work through.
Yeah, I imagine.
Let me just add one thing right here for the radio listening audience, because there's a lot of people who don't realize that the mask making at Icon Gallery is an ongoing thing every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 4. Anybody can go. It doesn't cost you anything, and all the supplies are there, and it's really fun. So come and join the fun.
It's the new Icon at 58 North Main, down on the square.
Well, there's another whole dimension to this, which is what happens if an artist is operating with full integrity and artistic purity, and something that he or she creates catches on. Then the mercantile element comes to the artist. The artist hasn't given it a second thought in this example. If the artist decides to pay the rent by doing 6 or 8 more of the blue ones, even though, you know, the plan had been to just go where the spirit took him, is this selling out? Is this, is this a compromise? Or is it just another choice?
He knows in his heart if it's a compromise or not. I sort of have to be given complete freedom. But I was married to Lynn Durham, and we worked together, but we worked from very different angles. She needed a starting point. She needed somebody to give her a job, yeah. tell her what to do. Otherwise, she just was blank, didn't quite know what to do. Mm-hmm. But so she needed us, because she was a natural illustrator. So she needed something to illustrate. So she yeah. needed a commission. So some people work beautifully from commissions, and other people, like myself, make, I almost said one of the words I can't say.
Oh, there
bad
you.
Art.
Are we allowed to say bad art?
What is bad art, Bill? That's another topic.
Well, oh, the artist knows. It's in the yeah, heart of the artist right. that you know whether what you've made, you don't really know whether it's good or bad by other people's standards, which is a should not to stuff, but you know whether this vision or the feeling inside got into this thing or not. And the only reason to do anything in the first place is to bring out in the manifest field an inner experience, something that you love, some feeling you have, or something that you've seen outside that you love and you want to comment on it. And that's mm-hmm. what you're doing.
Well, let me ask both of you a question. If you're an artist, or you feel like an artist, which is tantamount to being an artist, and you don't have much money, and you can't afford to have a room in your house dedicated to your art, and you can't afford materials because the cost of acrylics these days is comparable to a month's rent, and you can't afford even half-decent brushes, and you can't afford to drive to Iowa City to try and get some canvas, is there anything you can do? What's your advice to someone who really wants to be artistic and doesn't seem to be able to get any of the resources?
Well, I have an answer, but if you want to be first, go ahead.
It doesn't. Go ahead, and then I'll.
Well, my answer is that the art is in your soul, and it's not in the materials. And if you've got something to say, if you love anything at all that has anything to do with visual expression, you will figure out a way to talk about it. Whether you have a stick and sand in front of you, or whether you have the most elaborate array of sophisticated tools. And I find that the person that has the most elaborate array of sophisticated tools is more likely to get lost in the technology and lose his art than the person who is on the beach with a stick making shapes. Mm-hmm. Now, who's his audience? The birds? Or is the audience the three people standing around? Or yeah. this guy's wake somebody up sleeping on the beach.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, whoever's around will be your audience, and right. that's going to wash away. Right. Now, maybe you could make that mark with as much, like, sensitive emotion with a pencil on a piece of paper, a number two school pencil on a piece of notebook paper. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody can have a tool to make art in front of them. It's whether they have the soul that wants to express itself visually and some feeling of deep
yeah.
feeling.
And my answer is pretty much the same answer. When I was a little girl, I had a very small allowance, and mainly what I bought were number two pencils and little tablets and did drawings on them. And I go to Cafe Paradiso pretty much every morning, and Jim Weidel is sitting there doing these exquisite pencil drawings, usually with a number two pencil on a little inexpensive drawing pad, and they're gorgeous drawings. And you know, I asked him once, why don't you use a whole range of pencils, fine pencils, and he said, because I don't need to. So I think you can make things out of anything
yeah.
if you
yeah.
want to make something creative, spirit will.
And this other thing of, like, this has always thrown me, because I always was one of those people, because I'm a perfectionist, that dampened myself. I would subvert my efforts a lot by my perfectionism. I would feel that it had to be just right, and it had to be packaged just right, and it had to be in the way that they wanted before I can come out with it and do something
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
And I've learned through my experience in life that there were these publishers that we worked with, and we were so concerned with the archival qualities of our work, how long the pigments last, how long the papers last. And this other guy that ended up his work being more popular than ours with the popular public, and who sold lots of books, lots and lots of books, and lots of all the stuff that they would publish. He did it. He painted with just cheap paints on those cardboard things that come inside. They used to come inside your shirt.
I was just going to say shirt cardboard.
It's really cheap cardboard. Yeah. It's going to get bad real fast, and archivally speaking.
Yeah.
And yet he did that. And I was like, no, he can't be famous. He can't be rich. He can't sell more than we can, because he's not doing it right. He's doing it wrong.
See, this is there's an interesting point I think we need to make to round out this discussion too about making money, is that there's actually nothing wrong with making money through your, you know, through your art. And there's, I think, the key for me is marketing after the fact. It's like you create what you love, and then if people want it, there's probably some way that you can get it to the people. Because what is people who buy art, unless they're simply doing it for a financial investment, are doing it as a trade. They're giving you something valuable. They have their money for something they love that you've made.
Maybe the secret is that the money coming or not coming has absolutely nothing to do with what you do.
Yeah, it's not your motivator.
Yeah, it's a secondary.
Yeah, it'll come if it's going to come.
Product.
And you may get paid for your art, or you might get paid because you're related to someone you didn't even know. Mm.
There was some spiritual teacher who once said, you do what your heart, you know, follow your heart's passion, and you make your living with your left toe. And which is, you know, there are a lot of actors and writers and artists who have to do some day job or something to pay the bills, and they don't mix it with their...
Well, no, this was the choice I made, because I'm one of these people that has to do it from inner necessity. I'm a purist that way, and I have to make something. If people like it, fine. If they don't like it, fine. It has its own commercial life after that. But so I had to come to terms with this when I stopped this publishing thing. I divided up, and I used my art skills over here on one side to make a living, and I did framing and painting and refinishing furniture, all sorts of things that used my skill with materials. That left me completely free to satisfy my inner necessity.